Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Bijou. Let's get political. Political.
Please explain.
Flexing the democracy muscle.
We cannot succumb to the laziness.
Get informed. Get fit.
Do you want Labor's energy?
It's time to flex your democratic muscles, pals. Let's get political with your hosts, Sky Riggs and Stacey June.
Welcome to the fourth episode of Let's Get Political. I'm Sky Riggs from YVote.
And I'm Stacey June, writer and broadcaster.
Aha! Look at that. You're no longer founder of yourself, beige bitch. I mean, seriously.
I'm not. I've got to step it up. You know, I'm a big believer in all my other podcasts, all my self-care, woo-woo, blah, blah, that words mean things. And here I am just kind of uncomfortably scattering around my titles. So here I am owning it on week four.
Stace, when I'm putting forward my bio for stuff like panels and that, I'm like, I'm pumping you up. I'm like, co-host of Let's Get Political with podcasting queen Stacey June. So you can roll. I'll be your publicist.
Yeah, thank you. Everyone needs to walk around with a publicist.
Yeah, that and a personal assistant.
This week we are covering, and just before we hit the 2019 election, this episode will drop. We are covering politicians. What is it again? Sorry, I quit.
Personality versus party. What are you really voting for?
Yeah, so I think my understanding of this point is, I guess, the Trump effect to some degree, that this conversation has definitely started to be a lot more prevalent, even though what I don't think many of us understand about presidential campaigns, because the US say that, well, not say, but they have a democracy, but they run their campaigning very differently to how we do. But I think regardless of that, there has been a really big, I guess, interest in a conversation around presidential campaigning and this idea of who we're voting for and how the leaders of these main parties really sell themselves in as this one key figure, as opposed to you voting for an entire party.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting because it becomes more pronounced in election campaigns, but of course, personality makes a difference. Like, personality is our first touch point for how we start to understand values, and that's like then how we understand policy.
And connecting too,
yeah,
right?
Connecting.
So I think the interesting thing around a lot of the conversations I'm having, this whole Bilton. Yeah, that's his new. This whole Shorten v. ScoMo thing.
Yeah.
You know, so much of it. I wonder if it's because of this presidential campaigning or the way that I suppose they've decided, or maybe not Bill Shorten as much, but I guess ScoMo has really decided to be such a forefront of his campaign. I wonder if it's that's why we're kind of focusing on this personality instead of party issue, mm-hmm. or is it because they're both so divisive and they're both so different and people are so, they either love them or they hate them, that that's why I guess the conversation is around those two blokes this election?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, I think the analysis is, and I think the Prime Minister has already said it himself, that he's running a presidential style campaign. And there's so much that feeds into this. Like, first of all, in America, when you vote, you actually vote for the president. In mm-hmm. Australia, we're not voting for a prime minister, you're voting. So that's
but
the key difference.
But so many people, it's so interesting. as much as I think most people probably are aware of that, because you do know ScoMo's Liberal, you know, Bill Shorten's Labor, even Di Natale's Great, you know everybody.
Yeah.
You really, the conversation in the pub is about the blokes.
Yeah.
It's not about the party as such. And if it does come up, it's definitely secondary if it comes up.
And that, I think that makes sense. Like, if you think about it from a branding perspective, people want to identify it with something. And one of the major issues these parties have had in the last decade is they've had identity issue, basically. Like the big discussion around there's no difference between the major parties, the fact that they've flip-flopped all over the place with their policies. I mean, this election's the first time in ages where there's been a true distinction between the major parties. So I think it's pretty natural if you were like a marketing person to go, well, we need to give the public something to identify with.
Mm.
Let's put the personalities out front. But of course, Shorten's not running that campaign because you just feel a bit neutral about Shorten. Like, he's not the kind
leader. So many people don't see him as a leader.
Yeah, that's definitely a thing.
They don't necessarily dislike him, but there's just this un-leadering thing.
Like, you don't think of like Barack Obama or Jacinda Ardern in the same sentence, really. It's quite interesting because I think in a way it's put the emphasis back on the whole Labor Party and on their policies, whereas the way it looks like the Coalition and Liberal Party specifically are campaigning is it's very much about Scott Morrison's personality.
Mm.
But this isn't new. Like, connecting personality isn't like a new thing in politics, but I think, like you said, like since Trump, how is that like affecting how people campaign and how we perceive politicians and our expectations of how they act in the media? So I think two things that are worth discussing is like, one, the difference between personality and being able to identify with someone and having an authentic sense of a leader, and then when commentary gets really personal and it's unhelpful and not really any kind of indicator of who they are as a person or their policy, like positions, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there's a big spectrum between getting to know someone and being popular and it turning into a big soap opera.
Do you think often it turns into soap operas when people don't give a lot? Like, say, for example, for Julia Gillard, we knew so little about her life, and I'm not excusing such of the disgusting coverage that was done in such a sexist way around her term, but she really did – it was just professional for her, you know. Like, we had some idea that she lived in Altona with a dude and he had a kid and, you know, that was it. Like, there was really not a lot of information given. So I wonder if people go digging even more when people hold that part back. Like, could that have been – a better, I suppose, exercised in terms of her advisors and just thinking about the fact that you don't get to just pull back completely when people are trying to connect or trust you.
It's such a tough line to walk because I think the way that the news media is like 24 hours a day and then, of course, social media, anything, like, you know, is that balance between being authentic and putting yourself out there. But if they say, like, anything will be picked up on because everyone's looking for a story. And so I think a lot of people, politicians, have reined themselves in a lot, and there's a lot more control around messaging because if there's just one snippet of grab, that becomes the news.
And I get that. And I know that it'd be so much more heightened, but that's like any broadcaster or anybody in the eye, like in the public eye, like, you know, doing as much live radio as I have in my time, absolutely not under the microscope as politicians or a leader of the country. But I've always had this sense, and it's funny when to bring Eddie Maguire up, but he's a broadcaster. He does a lot of live stuff. He's there all the time. But when he makes mistakes, I do often think, you make mistakes because you actually thought that. Was it a mistake or is it just a showcase of who you actually are? Mm. And I think to some degree, covering up too much makes me question what you don't want to show. Like,
totally.
There is this ability, and we know it with reality television now. I know reality TV as well isn't, it's scripted and it's, you know, there's, but we expect to be able to see parts. So whilst I don't think we need to go to this celebrity level, there's got to be an argument to say that the way our culture is moving is that we have an expectation to have a bit of a picture of who you are, what you do, what your family are about, and what your true personality traits are, because that is how people gauge trust now.
Totally. And I mean,
always probably gauge trust,
yeah,
right?
Totally. I just think the level of exposure is so much higher now. Like if you think about to all the prime ministers before John Howard, like who wouldn't have had to deal with this 24-hour yeah. media cycle and stuff, like they're remembered for certain iconic things, but it was like the control and the media was crafted so much different
yeah.
in a different way. Whereas like now they just
the
need to say,
had a say. Yeah.
And it was, there was, you know, journalism in between yeah. too. But like now, like I think this, the need for a story and those clicks and stuff means they say one thing and that becomes the grab and it detracts from the story. And yes, there's lots of other people in the eye, but it's, they're not being necessarily held up as looking out for the lives of people in their country. Yeah. And so I think that's why we have a different expectation of politicians. And I agree with you. It'd be so much better that if you could be authentic. And I think, people like Jacinda Ardern walk that line pretty well of,
I think most women do it, funnily enough. It's really interesting. I find even people like Tanya Plibersek, mm-hmm. even Julie Bishop yeah. when she was in, you know,
actually,
there
yeah,
was just this kind of idea that they, yeah, a bit of Women's Weekly here, you'd kind of have a bit of an idea of who they were at home, but they were in work mode when they were at work, you know, so
yeah.
there was.
And it didn't feel, you know, it's interesting
pushed.
Observation. Yeah, like there's a natural like storytelling to it, because I think like that's something that came out of the Trump-Clinton campaign was, you know, whether you agree with him or not, he felt authentic. You trusted that what he was saying, even if it changed, it was authentically him. Whereas Clinton, my impression of her and that campaign is even with all those media advisors, she is such a policy wonk that she had trouble selling the ideas and the values and the stories that come before the policy.
Mm.
And so she never got a chance to implement those policies. So I think you do have to be, you know, be able to do that. And it's a real struggle. Like we don't see a lot of politicians in Australia like really thriving in that social media space and using that as a form of direct communication with the public.
Mm. It is interesting. And I think there needs to be a little bit of, as much as I think what I've taken from the Trump stuff is obviously we don't want people with lots of money that have been on a celebrity television show to be running our country. That's not an aspiration for Australia from me. But I do think we need to start being quite realistic on how people's behaviour is and how people receive connection and how people receive warmth and how people yeah. receive a story, as you were saying. And I think things like, you know, your appearance, whether you're female or male, I think the way that you speak to people, there's just so many parts of these two particular major politicians that are leading these parties that I think, who's advising them? Like, this just feels so prehistoric. Like, surely we have some picture of what Bill Shorten's house is. Like, why haven't we got a camera in his effing house? Like, how, like, I know the White House is different and whatever, but think about Michelle Obama, those girls, the dog.
Oh, yeah.
You get this picture, man. Like,
but, like, she, like, as a communicator, oh my gosh, like, her, like, so I actually read Hillary Clinton's book and then straight after read Michelle Obama's, and it's chalk and cheese in the
yeah,
way they communicate.
I've
like,
only
Clinton's
read
like, and then I did this and I believe this and da da da. Whereas Michelle is like,
well, she's older.
She tells a story,
yeah, it's
and it's just a different communication style. There's all the arguments for how social media and all of this has like potentially degrading, you know, good, robust debate and all these things. But I think there's a real opportunity for the democratization of politics, because one of the problems is like, so you see, in my view, like you look at Bill Shorten and Scott Morrison and it looks like their Instagram feeds are like, they feel so.
Oh my God, I want to look up them now.
They feel so, it's really funny.
I didn't even think about it.
Staged.
I don't even know what, can you believe I follow Obama and wouldn't even know what, like the leader of the prime minister of
yeah,
our country
yeah, yeah.
and the opposition leaders
so look at
Instagram pages
up. Now, okay. Still time.
Okay.
So here's the thing is like you look at it and it feels like they've taken their press shots a lot of the time, or at least it feels very staged and like plonked them on Instagram. And
he's only got 39,000 followers, Bill Shorten.
Both of them, I think, are under 40,000.
What?
See, you could run. And I think this is the thing is I think there's a huge opportunity. There's people that are using these platforms. And one of the challenges for the major parties is bringing up new energy and people that actually reflect the electorate, not just career politicians. And I think there's
Sorry. ScoMo's only got 45,000. He's the prime minister of the country.
Well, he's higher than last time I checked.
Wow.
But like, that's the thing is imagine, like, if you're not bringing through people that reflect the electorate and that can't communicate through his power, like, think about how many people have 100,000, 200,000, a million followers and their ability to mobilize the community. If they care, like, they can run. And I think that we'll see this with independents a bit this year is, you know, can people use their own platforms? You don't need, you know, big mainstream media necessarily anymore.
It's
okay,
so,
we're on his, we're going down the Instagram.
Oh my God, sorry. I am listening. I am listening, but there's just something about this bloke. I don't know what it is, ScoMo, but just some of these photos are like, you know what he looks like, what his version of Instagram is? Your dad's drunk mate that you don't really want to talk to. Like, he just not.
I'm not sure that that was the brand guide they came up with.
But he just, I don't know, he doesn't look like if he's coming or going. Like, I don't, I'm indifferent. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying, there's nothing to really hate, but there's nothing, there's just absolutely
nothing to love.
He's just so irrelevant to me.
But that, and like, I think what we see translating on Instagram is this same kind of really controlled messaging and imaging and optics and all that kind of stuff where
it doesn't,
everything's
it doesn't
been controlled.
Connect.
They're not using Instagram in the sense that's made it popular.
Same with Shorten. It's the same thing. Exactly as you say, it's campaign photos. I will say as Instagram users, and we all are, the photos are better quality, so you straight away, I don't know, you're more likely to kind of look through them. But then I liked that some of ScoMo's were of him with his wife at the cafe. So I like that as well. So you can't kind of try and tell them to be better and then, you know, you've got shit quality photos, blah, blah, blah. But I think
there's a balance. Like,
yeah, I think there is
a
balance.
We want some insights. And, like, I think the point we're trying to make is
I can't believe these are the two options. Like, on Instagram, it just looks way more of a joke than it actually is. Like, I think, you know, I just think it's just quite funny. I just do. I think everyone needs to go and look at their Instagram accounts because I think you've really hit the nail on the head in terms of where they are in their unique or at least modern thinking of campaigning, but not just campaigning, this idea around having an opportunity to really showcase a very big group of people, who they are, what they stand for. I mean, social media has changed the world. People are doing viral videos that have got a kid, you know, like lip syncing a Taylor Swift song from Oregon. And we don't know who they are. They're a nobody. And the video's gone viral. They have an opportunity to do something so much bigger.
Well,
it's bizarre.
And if they don't figure it out and start to bring in candidates that do probably, in my view, like reflect the electorate more broadly, then they risk having people that do know how to use those platforms that can mobilize. You know, like if Kayla Sinney's, you know, decides she wanted to run for politics, she's got 11 million followers, you know, and who knows how many of those are from Australia, but pretty sure she could give whoever her local member is a run for their money.
I just don't think we're a country that's ever going to get to that point, but I do think there's a balance. Yeah, I do. And funnily enough, maybe a year ago I thought we might because we were in such disarray. I think now at least from both of those, maybe they are supposed to look like funny old men on Instagram to some degree. We want that. There's an age element that with people that run the country in our country. Do you know what I mean? Like I look at the Prime Minister of New Zealand and all these different countries, they're younger and vibrant and relevant. I guess I just don't see us in that scheme. And maybe we should aspire to that. Why shouldn't we aspire to something that we'd have a leader that we could relate more to? I just think I kind of have always thought for us that just won't be Australia's jam.
I mean, I hope we can find the middle ground. Like, I'm not saying, like, you know, I don't think we need to go to full-on celebrity
politics.
Yeah,
we don't need
politics.
A teenager or a, yeah, complex
like,
celebrity.
But I just do think we're craving authentic connection and we want to see leaders with really strong principles and values and stick to those things and we need that stability and that vision setting, really. Like, we don't want to just be looking back and playing safe. It's like we want to see there's some big issues we're facing, climate change being one of them, and we want to see some leadership.
Before we speak to Barry Cassidy, who is host of the most successful political show in the country, Insiders, who he's only hosting, I don't know how long, but he's retiring from that very soon. But he is a political genius and such a great conversationalist. He's a good friend of mine, and he's going to be on the show very soon. Mm. But before we move on, I want to ask you a question on that. When you speak of transparency, when you speak of this, I suppose, connection element that we want in a leader, we want to be able to see who they are. Do you think that they may just be using some platforms incorrectly, or maybe being advised by people that have campaigned, you know, years ago, even though I do hear a lot of the campaigners or media advisor in their 20s because they need to survive elections. So a lot of older people don't necessarily, generally speaking, work in those types of roles. I know a lot of the media advisors happen to be more younger skewed, ironically. But is it actually about the fact that some of these campaigns have been, I suppose, maybe not best ran on social media, or is it the fact that we have a lot of politicians that aren't actually real? And there aren't real things to show.
I think there's a mixture of things going on. I think, understandably, they keep their messaging really tight because one thing that goes out of place can destroy a campaign for them. And so I think they weigh up the risks and decide to play it super safe. Mm. And they kind of know that they need to be, that they could be being more authentic, but I just think they weigh up the risks. And it's, you know, they're talking about getting into government and they don't have that risk tolerance. And I think there is an issue where there's career politicians and there's a huge amount of hierarchy, and it's not exactly, you know, just open to the average person to be able to run as a candidate. And I think some parties have a bigger issue there than others, where you see better gender equality and diversity and stuff in the ranks than others. But I think there is an issue where they need to work harder to actually engage the electorate in their membership and in their policy design, things like that.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there's a one thing to look out for. Like, personally, when I'm looking out for it, I just try and think, is this, because it's really natural to engage with politicians on values. That's how we kind of navigate and decide whether we think, how we think about their policies. But if it's getting beyond personality, if it's about being personal and attacking them for things that are irrelevant to their ability to represent their community and irrelevant to their leadership, for example, their haircut, and this applies,
or their suit, I keep talking suit, about
their men, women, that
suit.
Kind of thing. I think that's where you can, like, you know, if you're talking about what can we do, because a lot of it's outside of our control, I think that's one thing you can do is, like, don't click on the thing that gets super personal. Just try and, you know, keep it about the things that matter. And that's one thing that, like, we can all do as citizens.
Mm. Unlikely that's going to happen. I mean, I don't really click on much clickbait. I try and go source news from where I want to source it from. But I do think a lot of people do. And I think that's, how do you ever overcome that?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think about this, and, like, in other spheres of our life, we kind of make a decision, well, you know, I'm going to stay up watching Netflix even though I need to go to sleep. Or, like, you make those decisions all the time in your life in other spheres. Or if you decide you want to feel less anxious, that you need to stop, you know, you need to start challenging unhelpful thoughts. Like, I think we all come to place, you know, my view is we're constantly making similar decisions in our lives every day. Mm. And part of it is just becoming aware. Like, even if you click on the thing, like, be mindful of how much you're absorbing it. If you want to read it, fine. But, like, think about how much you're taking that on and letting that influence your perception of, and remember that they are generally part of a party, and there's policies and real decision making that goes on. And if you're letting, you know, whoever's put that piece of information out there is doing it intentionally to influence you.
Mm. And that's a good piece of
advice. There's intention behind that.
And I think that's more realistic. I think you might be interested in knowing what Bill Shorten's wife's doing, or what ScoMo did at a regional radio station or whatever, but it is a good point. You're not just jumping in and choosing your GP off some random,
I found a great electrician, Sparky Steve, great name.
But you know what I mean? You're not choosing your GP based on what they look like. You know, you're thinking about other things. So I think we can be better I think you're right. Barry Cassidy joins us to talk about this idea around personality versus party and what are we actually voting for. If you haven't come across Barry before, which I think you've probably been living under a rock, but he is the host of Insiders. You might see him do all kinds of different programs on the ABC and The Project, and also was a political advisor for Bob Hawke for many, many years. He was first a journalist, then headed over to Parliament himself, and now he's back in the media. So the guy has seen every single view there is to see of politics. Okay, Barry Cassidy up next.
Did you know? So this is interesting. Young people make up about 30% of the electorate. So if there is a major swing in the youth vote, it could determine the outcome of the election.
Hey, Baz, do you think that I think one of the strengths that a lot of people are finding, particularly if you're a female voter and you're looking at the representation in the different major parties, do you think the Labor Party is actually suffering from the fact that Scott Morrison has called it such a presidential kind of campaign when Shorten, in particular, a lot of people argue, is the less liked character but has maybe a stronger party?
Well, that's why Scott Morrison has done this in a way as well. You know, they research these campaigns in advance, and the big issues really in the second half of last year were disunity was the big negative for the coalition, and some doubts about Bill Shorten's leadership was a big negative for Labor. And so because Scott Morrison leads as preferred Prime Minister, they saw that as a lifeline, and they thought we'd better grab this for all it's worth and make it a choice between him and Bill Shorten. Mm. And look, he had little choice anyway because they don't have a lot of women. You mentioned women. They don't have a lot of women in their ranks, whereas Labor after this election will have 50% women in their numbers. So that's why they've done that. But in a sense, I think they've tried to rely on an advantage that doesn't really exist because that preferred prime minister thing doesn't mean very much anyway, because historically, almost always, the prime minister is the preferred prime minister over the opposition leader, no matter who that might be. Kevin Rudd was an exception when he first became opposition leader up against John Howard. There have been one or two exceptions. As a general rule, that's the case. And in any case, the gap is now 7 points, which really is neither here nor there. So, as I say, I really do think they relied on an advantage that, in the end, the closer you get to the election, it's not there.
I'm glad you brought up Kevin Rudd there, because in his campaign that he originally ran, it felt a lot closer to that kind of presidential celebrity style kind of communication.
What was his thing, K-Rudd? What was his
name? Kevin 07.
Kevin 07! What an absolute joke that feels now!
But we remember it, right?
Yeah, we do remember.
And I remember it felt refreshing, and he was across lots of different platforms, and I found it quite interesting that Scott Morrison and Shorten's campaigns, their Instagrams, they only have, both of them have less than 40,000 followers. Their Instagrams feel like they've taken, copy and pasted their campaign shots and put them on Instagram. It's like they don't quite get the platform yet. Barry, in your view, is there something holding Australians back? Why aren't we seeing the same type of kind of celebrity use of Instagram that we're seeing in the States, where, you know, Trump and Obama have millions of followers? And
well, that's why they don't get the followers, because they don't know how to use it. They just put out political tripe the whole time. The only way that I think social media works in Australia is because a lot of the supporters on either side know how to use it. But overwhelmingly, it's Labor. I mean, Labor has a clear advantage when it comes to social media, because they've got people who are far more savvy. Which again is, I think, a reflection of the coalition, that their supporters tend to be older, and a lot of them are men, and they don't really have the same kind of devotion for the social media that others do. Look, it's almost meaningless. But what cuts through occasionally is that those who are savvy know what to put on the social media. They pull out those kind of grabs from the doorstops that they think they can exploit, and then they run with. But it's so full of stuff too that's just rubbish. That people are making stuff up. They're putting out false claims on either side, and social media for all of the potential is still not there. I mean, Kevin Rudd was a bit of a dag, but he did know how to embrace social media, and he got some value for that. But the Labor Party suffered in the end because it was all about Kevin Rudd. That in the end was part of his downfall.
But that's an interesting point though, because I think it might have got him over the line the way he involved his daughter Jessica. I remember her, she played such a massive part. It was like a reality TV show to some degree with that family. And it's interesting because as much as we like to say that it doesn't it doesn't really hold that much power. I think that it does. I think in the culture that we live in at the moment, and particularly we know that young voters hold so much power, particularly this year and the last election, and we saw what happened with the plebiscite. Is there something that they need to consider a little bit more with it? Maybe not this presidential campaign, but this more celebrity profile approach, or do you think they're doing that and just doing a shocking job of it?
No, I just think they're doing a poor job of it, and I think that, you know, the official stuff that come out of the parties and the campaign headquarters is useless. It's only the stuff at the edges that their supporters are contributing, I think, that really matters. And you talk about young people, and I think, again, this is something the coalition doesn't quite get. I mean, they hang on to sort of almost mythical presentation. Like, for example, they say that we are the better economic managers. And every time News Poll does a poll, sure enough, it shows, not overwhelmingly, but it shows the coalition are the better economic managers. But the Australia Institute broke that down the other day, and people right up to 35 don't believe that. People up to 35 say that Labor are the better economic managers. So it shows you that times are changing, and the Liberals are hanging on to some of these sort of misguided conceptions because it suits them. But rapidly, they're losing them, and it may be partly that they're losing that because they haven't got a grip on social media.
So, Barry, if you were, say, a campaign manager for any opposition party right now and you had to try and think about a strategy, would you try and find someone that's very savvy with social media, perhaps has 3 or 10 million followers, and see what, like, think about how to use their platform to mobilize the community and pick them as a candidate? Or would you try and think about how to get an existing candidate to be better at using that platform?
Well, I guess if you're a campaign manager, you would take that into account. And if somebody did have 300,000 or 400,000 followers, that would be a factor. And you'd think that they'd be able to draw on that. You would hope that in the end, though, they choose candidates based on based on their policy positions.
Not every country.
Their interest in running the country, just small things like that. celebrity candidates have invariably failed in Australia. You know, we've now got a rash of independents, but you've got to make the distinction. The independents who are succeeding are not people who are celebrities in their electorates. They're people who were hard workers in their electorates who became.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm well known because of what they did within the community. Celebrity candidates have got a poor record. I mean, Peter Garrett was probably one exception. He did okay, though. In the end, I don't know whether he really enjoyed the experience. But at least he was a passionate person, and he wasn't there because he was a celebrity. So I think, we should pick it based on the number of Twitter followers. Mm.
And so talk to us about Bob Hawke in terms of he ended up being such a iconic personality. And as much as he was a politician first and foremost, there was something else, there was a kind of celebrityism about him that essentially who he was and that real strap around bloke. Did you, when you worked on that campaign or when you're working with someone like Bob Hawke, was that turned up or was that just who he was and it just kind of just fed to media headlines and fed to the public? Or was that part of him turned up?
It was. It became more obvious during campaigns because he was out and about with people and so they saw more of him through the cameras. But, you know, John Singleton described him as an intellectual knockabout, and I think that's what he was. It was a combination of the two, that he was an intellectual, obviously, and you don't run the country for that long unless you've got some intellect. But he was also the knockabout, and he related in that way. And he absolutely loved sort of being out and about. It sort of gave him energy. You know, two things gave Bob Hawke energy: the sun. He would lie in the sun, and that seemed to energise him. And he also enjoyed meeting people. And that gave him a bit of energy, whereas Paul Keating hated it. He hated getting around because he didn't quite relate to people in the same way. So he had the intellect, but he didn't have that sort of knockabout ability to just go out and talk with ordinary people at their level.
So you can't – so are you saying you kind of can't teach that to these leaders at the moment? Like, you need to have that innately with you, and is that why maybe a lot of them aren't that popular, because they may be in it for – very different reasons.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the two leaders at the moment, and Scott Morrison thinks that he's got it. He thinks he's a great communicator, and you get this sort of verbal diarrhea day in and day out, but he's a windbag. I mean, that's what it is. But if you boil it down, he's a windbag, and not a lot of what he says is going to resonate, because it just is like throwing words against the wall. Bill Shorten, on the other hand, if he's to win this election, it would be a strike against charisma. It would show you that charisma doesn't really matter. And maybe that's a good thing. You know, maybe we finally need a leader who's not
like
getting there because of a sort of a particular personality trait.
I think, well, I mean, the thing that I've noticed is, like, yeah, the emphasis isn't just on Shorten, it's on all of these other personalities, and so it feels more like a party. And so you have a sense that, because not many people are a member of a political party these days, and so the sense that there's actually representation, I feel like, is a bit stronger right now with Labor, because there's more than one person up front, whereas so lots of personalities versus one.
What happened in the first couple of weeks of the campaign is Bill Shorten came in for a bit of criticism because he didn't seem to be on top of the detail. There didn't seem to be enough passion there. He wasn't breaking through. And so he started, he got someone to ride shotgun with him the whole time, and he would give his spiel, but then he would hand over to a Chris Bowen or a Christina Keneally or Tanya Plibersek or Penny Wong. And it started to work a whole lot better then, because one, he relaxed about the detail because he knew he had the person that was expert in that portfolio alongside of him, but also to share it with people that clearly I think are easy to listen to. People like Tanya Plibersek and Penny Wong are a whole lot easier to listen to.
Oh, please, imagine them as running for leaders. That would be a dream.
Yeah.
Oh.
But, you know, when you talk about how at individual, you know, is it presidential or is it built on the single individual? Like, take a look at what Clive Palmer's trying to pull off at the moment by spending $70 million. It's the most ridiculous proposition you could ever imagine. He runs people. He's got 151 candidates. He's got a candidate in every seat and says he'll win. To do that, he would need to win 76 contests when he won't win a single one. But what if he was to win 76? Who would be prime minister? I mean, he can't be, because he's running in the Senate. He's got all these, you know, wackos running around, and from that group he would have to choose a prime minister. It's just an insane proposition.
Do you think on Clive Palmer, I kind of get the sense that there's a bit of a collective, cringe factor that people – because he's gone to the extreme. Like, he's not just running, you know, two candidates or something. He's running 100. So, like, do you think people feel like he's just – like, he's gone so extreme that people feel like he's trying to buy their vote and that's actually worked against him? Or is it just that his personality doesn't resonate?
Well, it's – I think people who know him would be offended by the fact that he owes his workers millions of dollars, that he owes the Commonwealth because they've already paid some of that money to the workers, that he faces charges under the Corporations Act. I mean, all of that would bother them. And you'd think the closer you get to Queensland. Look, he might get a Senate seat because you don't need as many votes, of course, to get elected to the Senate. He might get a Senate seat in Queensland. If he does, you'll keep out Malcolm Roberts from One Nation. So you can take your pick as to whether that's a good or a bad outcome.
It's pretty scary. I think there is something interesting about, I suppose, our generation, the way that we want to consume information, the way that we want to vote. I think often now people are trying to get a little bit more educated. I know that at the absolute minimum, people will use Vote Compass that are in my social circles, and then maybe even further do some own research, heavens forbid. But it is one of these things that is changing. Do you think the Trump effect had an effect on the younger generation and us really, I guess, educating up and trying to ensure that essentially that doesn't happen to us?
Yes, and I'd like to think it goes a little further than that too, and that the experience in the United States has made us not only more aware but more alert, and more alert to those kind of developments. You know, when kind of just falsehoods are put out, or people can just deny the obvious, and And they can start using extreme language, and they don't care whether they incite racism or not. I would hope in Australia, because we're a very different country, I hope it does set off a few alarm bells.
I've just got one more question. You know, we've talked a lot about like young, well, on our show, we talk about how young voters are more likely to vote on an issue to issue level. And you can see how personality and popularity could really feed into that if they identify with a candidate. But my understanding is baby boomers and much older Australians are much more likely to be ideologically aligned, kind of aligned with their party. That's who they vote for. Regardless, do you think we're going to see that shift? Because I just feel like even when I hear my parents' generation complaining about inaction and the state of the various political parties, I still think in my head, yeah, but you're not going to change who you vote for. You're still going to do the same thing. What's your perception of this or your understanding of this issue?
Well, I think there's a potential for the Liberal and National parties to lose a whole generation of voters because they just don't get climate change. And they were very late to the party. And because they're surrounded by people who demand of them that this is all a waste of money and that we don't believe in it, either they don't believe in it or they say that it's a waste of time anyway because we can't win this on our own, you know, that hoary old argument. It's like saying you can't do anything about poverty in Africa with my $10 in my pocket, so I won't give you the $10. Well, you know, if the whole world gave $10, we'd get somewhere. And so this is what they argue against the basics. And I think that young people get climate change. And I know that a lot of the Liberal members in Victoria who are door knocking are now far more aware of the strength of the issue than they were just 5 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the danger. When you have an issue as big as that, and I do think it's the number one issue in this election campaign, and they just don't yet realise that. But that's the risk. That's the risk that they will lose a generation of young people.
It's interesting because I still think that there is – I don't think it's our generation. It might be the generation younger than us because I still feel like my generation, maybe Gen Y and the older skew of that, are still – like, for example, I was at the pub, few blokes sitting there. It was actually – I was at a boys' night, so it was quite intense – two people that owned their businesses and both spoke about how Liberal stands for small business. I found it quite interesting. I was like, that's quite different to what I've heard in the past, particularly different to what my parents would have told me. And then one of the dudes said, I did vote Compass and it's brought up that I should vote Labor. And I said, so who will you vote for? And he said, probably still Liberal. And I thought, how interesting. I just don't think we're quite at a point where people are shaking off their parent influence or these old school ideals in our generation as quickly as we think. I think there may still be a bit of an overlap of people that are kind of too scared to look into things.
Yeah, I do think, though, that this election might change some of those attitudes for this reason, that we've finally got an election where the differences are stark. You can't say that the major parties are similar. And when you've got one party that sticks to this theory, the old trickle-down theory, that you give tax cuts to individuals and particularly to companies, and in the end the employees will get the benefit of that as the companies grow. On the other hand, Labor is doing old-fashioned income redistribution like no Labor leader that I've known has done, not this blatantly and obviously and spelling it out for what it is. And that's simply by taxing on franking credits and negative gearing and all the rest of it, these tax concessions that in the main wealthy people get, and it is in the main wealthy people, and they're going to redistribute it. And they're telling you exactly how they're going to do that through childcare and so on. So it couldn't be more clear. And I think that might in itself cause people to rethink some of the
these old school thoughts,
the points that their parents have passed on down the years.
The wobble wobble, the cobble wobble, that was like the myth, the cobwebs. This has made me actually way more excited about this election. I was not sure where to go. It was feeling so close, but even if it is close, it still feels like there's shift coming, you know, in behavior. Like there is two clear sides, like you say, and it's exciting to think that wherever we land will be a very clear indicator of where we are as a country, which sounds like a really obvious thing. But the last few elections, I haven't felt like we'd get that clarity. It all felt really blurry.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment. Maybe Tony Abbott versus Kevin Rudd back then, but that was all, you know, that in the end that became a punishment for Labor for the way that they'd performed in government, and it wasn't about the policies. This time it's clearly about policies, and it's a clear choice between the two.
Thanks so much, Barry. We really appreciate your time. We know it's a big week this week.
Thanks, Baz.
Bye.
Did you know you can't vote until you're 18, but you can actually enroll to vote when you're 16, which I didn't know and probably didn't have much interest in doing, but it's an important factor to get involved. Okay, so 4 bite-sized episodes of conversations that we've had as mates and decided to record them for our launch, our little soft launch of Let's Get Political. And it's
you didn't say that right. Let's get political.
I can't do your voice.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm not even going to try because it's just, it embarrasses you every bit of the time. So it's just joy to me. But yeah, we do go in to vote this Saturday if you're listening pre-election 2019. What date will it be? The 17th or 18th? I voted already.
Have you?
Yes. I must say, it feels different this year. It feels like people are talking in the lines. People are being a little bit opinionated. People are looking at what kind of preference sheets and the handout things are in people's hands. What are you looking at? There's that real kind of energy of not competitiveness but judgment of who you're voting for, which is a good thing. Yeah. I think it's like, who are you going for? How are you going to put your vote forward? People are starting to really pay attention again.
Oh, and I feel like I actually walked past like 2 neighbors this morning having a chat about it. It was so good. But I feel like the first time in ages, there's been lots of discussion about policy. Mm-hmm. You know, we had Abbott, Gillard, Rudd, blah, blah, blah. And like for so long, it was just
bitching and leaders
horrible. And like, I actually feel like the coverage has been, and the discussions in, you know, like you say, with your mates and stuff, has been so much more about policy. And there's a real distinction between the major parties. And yeah, it does feel big.
Yeah, it feels different. I think you're right. And I think actually what I've learned from today's episode is that perhaps the fact that both of these particular, I guess, in inverted commas, leaders that are going to run our country don't come across as your ideal typical leader. So I think even though that has felt really unattractive to us pre-campaign or pre-election, once we got into it, we were like, well, we're going to have to vote either way. People are going to have to make a call. So why don't we actually do some research on what everything stands for? So at the beginning, I was like, ugh, feeling a little bit the same as those examples you used in the past. But then I think what it's done is by not having those glossy Malcolm Turnbull-like characters who, even if you had voted Labor your whole life, he could swing anyone. He was so charismatic, promised the world. You know what I mean? Like there was something.
They didn't use that.
I know. That's a different conversation, Sky. But it's like, well, they didn't use him in general. You know, like really, he was completely underused. But because he could sway so many people, there was such a leader quality about him. And we don't have that in either of these two main representations of the parties. So I thought that was kind of a shitty thing, especially when we look at leaders overseas and go, why can't they be more like Obama? Why can't they be more like Jacinta? But actually what I think it's done is got people a little bit more into the nitty gritty of what the parties are and what policies are and how do we vote and how do we actually figure things out. So I don't think that's been a bad thing.
No, I totally agree. Like I've actually read some analysis that like because the polling around the leaders is like preferred leader is like they're both so kind of uninspired that it has, turned people to looking at the parties and the policy and thinking more critically, which hopefully is the case. And I just, you know, next time we chat, it'll be post-election and we can debrief.
And I think that's something really nice to consider. If you still are a little bit undecided, you're still considering those things, you know, I guess the big conversation we've had today, and I think has been actually represented through, as you were saying, the coverage leading into the election, is that there is a conversation around who's running the show day to day. It is not one person. So, you know, have a think about what makes you feel comfortable with who's got your vote. Have a think about, you know, what's the group of people that are going to make you feel better as a collective, and start from there. I mean, that's a really good place to be, I suppose.
Yeah, that. And there's been so much coverage about where the parties stand on different policy issues. So if you're really feeling overwhelmed, like we always say, start with an issue you care about, find out where the parties stand and just start there.
I was marriage equality for so long, so I felt a bit lost this election because for so long I was voting no, whoever was doing marriage equality. And I'm, a swinger. Like, is it dependent on who I stand for, where I'm at in my life, you know? And I really encourage everybody to think like that. You should be thinking about what's relevant to me today, not what's relevant to me 3 years ago and what's relevant to my parents. What's relevant to me today and who's stepping up for that today? And I think when the marriage equality thing was fought and we won and it was all over, I was a bit like, shit. Okay, what's next? And so this election for me, I've thought about it. My personal approach has been a bit more of a well-rounded idea of my views represented. So I've kind of stepped away. But it has been a really great exercise to begin my own identity and voice in our democracy to begin with a policy. I think my next step, which is this election, has been I've been a little bit more research, so I've spread into several policies, but I think your advice on choosing one policy was where I kind of started to really start with a fresh start for myself. If you're a young voter and you really want to give yourself a fresh start, I think that suggestion is really, really great.
This makes me so happy.
So how do you approach it? I know you don't like to speak, like you've got to be so bipartisan, like so way, but how do you approach your choice?
Oh, like exactly the same way where, so there's a few things. I do look at where the parties stand on issues that I care about. And so I've been looking
several.
I think some really big, I'm really interested in the future. Like what's Australia's future going to look like? Because I don't think we can rely, like we can't rely on the kind of economy we've had in the past. We need to look. So I've been looking at future workforce and who's investing in innovation and also looking out for young people coming through, because 50% of the jobs in like something like 2020 are going, like young people aren't going to be trained for them. I got that wrong. But anyway, something like that. And so education, employment.
It's going to affect a lot of young people.
It's going to affect like a lot of young people. Automation, all that. So education, employment, climate change, and then like looking more like economic stuff. So like tax and those kind of things, and just looking at where the parties stand. And then the next thing I do is look at my individual candidates. And I think that's worth doing that because like in the past, I lived in a marginal electorate where, so the margin was like 1,000 votes or something.
And what does that mean for everyone?
So it's where the margin between the two leading parties, usually the major parties, is very small and it could swing either way. So I lived in this very marginal electorate. And actually, when I looked into the candidates and their kind of history and just like by Googling them and stuff, I found that the candidate that was with the party that less aligned with my views personally had a better history than the candidate running for the party I would vote for. Mm-hmm. So then that actually influenced how I voted too, because I thought it'd be great to have that person in parliament. And so that's getting a bit more nuanced, but I do think it's just worth checking out the candidates because they are your local person. You want to look at, you know, what have they been doing in the community?
Well, you know, there was one local candidate, I won't say which party, but they were at the voting booth. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of cool. I felt really cool to have met them.
Yeah. Did you ask them anything?
I asked them all if they were aware of how how it actually worked with what they were handing out. So like, were they aware of what, like the preferences are on people?
What did they say?
One guy was like, yes, we're very aware and we choose this and this. Mm. I found it really interesting that Labor had Greens. Greens didn't have Labor as high as them. Mm. And there was no, on my local electorate, there was no One Nation on Liberal like I thought. So it was, you know, and I don't know if that changes from local to local. I imagine that it does because they're different people, right? It's not like, would that change?
That's a great question. I didn't think so, but maybe you're right.
I think it would because I don't think everyone in Australia are getting the exact same specific local preferences. That doesn't make any sense.
Oh, I thought it was done at a party level. So there we go. Something to look up.
Yeah. So it is. It's still confusing. Still navigating through it. But at the end of the day, I want to leave you with this because I learned this on our own show and I've learned so much on this own show. If you do not vote for your preferences, the parties that need to put their vote somewhere that don't get up will choose where those preferences go. So when you choose only to put one in the top box instead of 1 to 6, or you go and number the other kind of green slip, the longer one, not the big, big, big long one, the short little kind of one, if you don't put all the numbers in that either, your preferences are chosen by someone else. You need to keep that in mind, because if you just put 1, 2, it means 3, 4, 5, 6 are going somewhere else that you didn't choose. And I think that's one of the biggest lessons I learned. So even if you're scared, just take your phone, and when you see the names there, quickly Google what the party is and then put a number in the box. Have an actual say, like follow it through the whole way, because I was not aware of that. And so it's interesting that I feel like I had 6 votes, but I was only using 1.
Yeah.
With preferences. Yeah.
Preferences are so confusing. And that's like,
but does that make sense to
you?
Like,
yeah, it does. And I think like also don't get like, if you haven't read up on preferences, there is instructions on the ballot paper.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, but it is confusing when they have the names and you don't recognize some of the names. And you are like, oh shit, I did some research on the top 3, but now I don't know.
Now
4,
I don't
5,
know
and
what
6.
The space cadet party is. Yeah. Yeah. I think like watch out, like that would be one key takeaway. Like watch out for the parties that you don't actually know who they are. And if you don't
I took my phone and I Googled.
I love it.
I took
it.
My phone
How
and
long
I
did
Googled.
You spend in the ballot?
Oh, it wasn't too long, because you get an idea of what the parties are straight up. They have a party line.
Yeah.
You go, okay, I'd prefer to do that rather than that. It's a very low preference if you're at number 6. Like, it's not like it's going to be number 1, but I want to choose that myself. I don't want someone choosing that.
Yeah.
So good luck, everyone. And
Yay,
make
have
sure
fun.
You vote.
Go get the vibes, the democracy sausage and the cupcake and all the things.
Yeah, I've never had a cupcake, just a sausage. I've got a wedding. That's why I voted. I can't even get a bloody sausage. I know.
What does that have to do with the wedding?
Because I'm just thinking about how I can't get a sausage or I can't get a cupcake, because they don't have sausages when you pre-vote.
Oh, right. Okay. I'm back on the wave.
Okay. All right, guys. We are going to take a bit of a break. We've kind of put these 4 episodes together pre-election. So we're excited to look at what we want to do with the next phase of Let's Get Political. There's so much to learn. If you haven't listened back to the other episodes, there's 3 full episodes that are so relevant to everyday politics and everyday conversations about learning about how a democracy works. So don't feel like they're just exclusive to this election. And we hope you've enjoyed them so far, and we'll see you very soon.
See ya.
Bye, guys.
Bijou Podcasts, the home of taboo conversations.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.